comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to The Kevin Smith Show. Whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful place we call Earth, thank you for being here at The Kevin Smith Show. We have lots to cover tonight. We're here because you have a right to know. We're here because you matter. We have some sad and shocking news today. Command Sergeant Major James Norton is dead. You will remember that Command Sergeant Major James Norton is the man who came on this show and told us about being present at a battle between some UFOs and the U.S. Army. Some of you thought it was nonsense, and maybe you still do. Some of you thought it was real. Maybe you still do. We have very sketchy info at this time, but the info that we have is as follows. Some weeks ago, the military took his rank. They busted him from command sergeant major all the way down to private. In case you're not aware, Command Sergeant Major is the highest rank that an enlisted man can achieve. They then posted him to guard duty at a closed military depot. On November the 13th, he was found unconscious at this closed military depot to which he had been posted. He was taken to the hospital, officially diagnosed with cancer and hepatitis C. Command Sergeant Major James Norton died today in intensive care at the hospital in Alabama. I spoke with a friend of Command Sergeant Major James Norton who told me that prior to November the 13th, Command Sergeant Major Norton showed absolutely no signs whatsoever of illness.
Watching you.
right. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show and my guest this evening, Karen Vance Hammond. Now, some of you are familiar with her because you've read her book. It's called Shoe Marks. I've read most of it since yesterday. That's a pretty good clip because that's not a small book. And it's really, really well written. But Karen Vance Hammond is she's involved in paranormal investigation, and we'll get her to tell us a little bit about that. She ran across a very true, real-life story about hauntings, and a particular haunting, and that became the basis for the book. And she joins us tonight via a double means. We have her on telephone, but we also have her on Skype. Now, the reason we're doing both is because we were unable to get the Skype audio to work properly. All right, Karen, welcome to the Kevin Smith Show. We're delighted to have you, and I think everything I said about your book is accurate, and as a matter of fact, I think it is, maybe I didn't do it justice, but it's a fantastic book, and welcome to the show. Well, I've got her on Skype video. I had her on the telephone, and I guess we do not have her on the telephone now, so we'll try it again. Let's see. Here we go. We'll just dial that up and see if we can get her back on the telephone. You know, one ring-a-dingy, two ring-a-dingies. I can see she's working with her equipment. Okay, we got you back. All right.
Yep, we got disconnected somehow, so...
I'm not surprised after the announcement I made at the beginning of this show. We do get disconnected, we get interrupted, we get fooled around with, but that's mm-hmm. okay. You know, they've been doing that for 11 years, and I'm still here. They need to get a clue. I won. Okay, so, welcome to the show. We're glad to have you.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Now, when you get everything set, I will be able to see that, and I will put you on screen. Okay. Karen, you are involved in paranormal investigations, and you have been involved with paranormal investigation for a number of years. Is that right?
That is correct.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about that. How did you get involved with that? When and why?
Well, years ago, and something important that...
Hang on just a second. Hang on. Can you hear somebody dialing a phone?
Yes, I can.
Okay. I can see you, and I know you're not the one doing that. I'm not the one doing that. We're being interfered with.
Okay. Is that better?
Oh, well, they're not dialing right now.
Okay.
So.
All right.
All right. Tell us a little bit about how, when, and why are you involved in paranormal investigation?
Okay. Years ago, after I had graduated from college, I moved up to the state of Maine, and I was taking care of a lady named Dolly. Now, at this time, and this is very important that I want listeners to understand, is that I came from a very strict Christian family. I mean, we did not believe in stuff like this. There is no way under the face of the earth that I would even believe in stuff like this. But anyway, when I moved up to Maine, like I said, I was taking care of a lady named Dolly. Now, she was on Deer Isle, Maine, and it's a beautiful area up there. I was in a home that was built back in the 1800s, and her daughters, they were going shopping, and they said, if you hear anything, if you see anything, don't be afraid. And I said, what in the world are you talking about? And they said, well, we have paranormal activity in our home. I laughed right in their faces, Kevin. I said, I don't believe in that kind of stuff. As soon as they left, that is when the activity started. I heard walking upstairs, running up and down the staircase, laughing, a child's voice, shadow figures, and I held on to Dolly as tight as I could, and I said, what in the world is going on? And she was lucid, and she said, he's here. I don't think I've ever been so scared in my entire life. I was not a believer when I walked into that home, and I left as a believer.
Who did she mean when she said, he's here? Who is she talking about?
She's talking about a little boy who had committed suicide, hanging himself with his own belt in his closet. When the daughters came back, I asked them, I told them, I said, something is in this house. And I don't know if I ever want to come back. And they said, just hang on. Let me tell you what happened. A little boy had committed suicide. He was probably, I say little, he was probably in his teens, and hung himself with his own belt. His parents found him in his own closet. The next time I went back, I asked to go up into the room. And I felt, as soon as that door opened, I felt like a blast of cold air was cutting me right through like a knife. I felt cold spots, hot spots. I felt a push, and I left that home. Like I said, the very first time that I went into that house, I wasn't a believer. There was no way, but I left as a believer. After that, I did start, because I do have a degree in psychology, we did study the paranormal psychology and parapsychology, excuse me. I did study that, and so I did have some knowledge to that. Now, a few years later, my husband and I had, we had gone to a place in Texas, I wish I could say where, but I can't, where we had purchased a home that had paranormal activity. And so when things started happening, I called my realtor and I said, I need for you to start doing a title search. Something is in our home. And she said, I know. So that further interested me. Then when my husband and I moved to Houston, that is when I started writing shoe marks. And I'm going to get into that a little bit later. Because we did live into a home that did have paranormal activity, I saw it, my husband saw it, my daughter saw it at the time. She was only 3 years of age, and I can get into that later. I started doing even more investigating, more reading about what this is, what does this mean. And when I moved to Houston, like I said, that's when I started writing shoe marks, and I met a very dear friend of mine, and I know that he is listening tonight, Scott Zosky of Houston Paranormal Research Team, one of the largest in Texas, had invited me to go on an investigation with him, and I did. And after that, a couple of months later, I was inducted into their team.
Okay, so now you were already writing the novel Shoe Marks when you became a team member, right?
Yes, sir, that's correct.
Uh-huh. Now, you said that because of the way that you had been raised, there was absolutely no possibility that you would believe this type of thing was real. And as you said, you went into that home in Maine completely not plugged into this kind of information, and you walked out of that home a believer.
Absolutely. Until someone, and I know that you will agree with me, Kevin, but I know that you will agree with me, and I'm sure that the listeners will too. If you have not experienced anything like that, then it's very difficult to understand. But once you do experience it, and you see it, and you feel it, it changes your whole perspective. I'm still a Christian, but I'm also a believer in the paranormal as well. So, like I said, once you see it, once you see it, you feel it, it just totally changes your perspective. So, you're right. I did not believe in anything like that before I stepped into that home.
All right, now, you came out of the home changed.
Yes.
At some point, you had to communicate in some way the fact, or in, whether you did it on purpose or it just sort of came out, but at some point, it was communicated to your family that you were now plugged into this kind of information. How did they respond to that?
My husband is so supportive. I did tell him about what happened, and of course I was not married to him at the time. I was single, but I told him about some things that had happened. And when we moved into the house in Texas, like I said, we did experience paranormal activity. Well, he became a believer as well and experienced some things himself, but he at first didn't want to tell me because he didn't want to think that I would think that he was crazy, and vice versa. But once we shared what we saw in the home, felt in the home, and my daughter seeing it as well, of course she doesn't remember, she was only 3 years of age, that's when we really started communicating with each other. We did get interested in the paranormal together. Of course, he is not as much as I am. He's basically the supporter. But we did go to some really neat places in Jefferson, Texas that we investigated ourselves. And one of them, you know, was absolutely horrific. But I have not received permission for me to mention the hotel on the show. But so, you know, he is so supportive. He is a believer, and that just really makes all the difference in the world, because I've met some paranormal investigators whose family is just, you know, wanting, ready just to kick them out of the home because they do believe in this stuff and have experienced this stuff. So it's very supportive. It's very important that you do have a supportive family.
What sort of paranormal activity? You've told us now a couple of times that when you moved into this house in Texas that you were experiencing paranormal activity there, and your husband saw it, you saw it. What are we talking about? What did you experience there?
The very first thing that I experienced was I was sleeping in the guest bedroom because my daughter was ill, and I wanted to be close to her because she was still in her crib. And I heard a crash in the kitchen. I sprang out of the bed. I thought that she had fallen. I didn't hear any cries. I went to go check on her. Her high chair table was in the middle of the kitchen floor. Now, how in the world did that move? There was no way. It was secured to the high chair. And it was pushed up against the wall. So there's no way. Another thing that we experienced was, and I don't want to get too vivid here, but I was in the shower, and I heard hairspray cans rumbling. One fell, and I saw a shadow pass the drape. And I asked my husband when I got out, "What in the world were you looking for?" And he said, "Honey, I've been outside the entire time. My daughter was in her crib. There's no way that she could have gotten out." Another time, and this is really what put the hairs on my neck standing up, is that I heard my daughter laughing. She should have been taking her nap. It was about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. She was supposed to be taking her nap like all kids need to do, but I heard her giggling. And I went into her room quietly, and I peeked around the corner to where she could not see me. And she was standing up. She was hanging on to her crib. And then she put her thumb in her ears and waved her fingers and stuck her tongue out and said, "Again, again." And I finally walked into the room and I said, "Sweetheart, what are you doing?" And she said, "Funny man."
Ooh.
And honey, I was silent.
That's
of course,
spooky.
I went along with it. I didn't say, "Honey, you can't see anything," because children are innocent. Children have more of a perception than adults do because we're tainted and, you know, we grow up with beliefs and values and things like that. She was only 2.5, 3 years old. And so, she pointed into the corner and she said, "Don't you see funny man?" And then she started playing peekaboo. And I looked in the corner, and I said, well, what does funny man look like? And she said, black, all black, black hat, black suit, black tie, but white shirt. Because at that time, she had started learning her colors. And I looked again, and she said, bye-bye, funny man gone. Well, I felt like moving the crib out of her room, locking the door, but I knew that I couldn't do that. And I told my husband about it. Another time, we were making cookies. She was approximately 4 years old. And we both heard at the same time the back door open and slam shut. We both looked at each other and said, Daddy's home! Meredith got out of her chair, ran down the hall. I ran down the hall. I didn't know why my husband would even be pulling in at that time. The door was bolted and locked. My husband did say that he was outside, and when he was coming in, he saw a woman standing at the kitchen sink, dressed in period clothing with long hair. On another snow day, when, of course, this was up north in North Texas, out of the corner of my eye, I saw a man standing dressed in all black, just as my daughter had described to me, standing in the snow. So that is when I called my realtor and I said, something is going on here. My husband has seen it. Things have flown off my, of course, you know, the high chair table. And I just went on, and I did believe in the paranormal, of course, you know, after Maine. And she said, I will do a title search, but I don't think that anybody has died in the home. I don't know. So that is what we experienced in North Texas. That is, of course, you know, has nothing to do with shoe marks. But it did give me somewhat of more experience to write this novel.
All right. I appreciate you telling us about all of that, because now I've got a bunch of questions that I'm going to ask. But we do have to step away for a break here, in less than about 20 seconds. We will, do that, and then we will come back and, continue. And I've got a number of questions I want to ask, pertaining to what you shared with us. Ladies and gentlemen, my guest this evening, Karen Vance Hammond. She's the author of a book called Shoe Marks, and we will be back right after this.
You're listening to The Kevin Smith Show, like no other talk radio on earth.
And welcome back to The Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening, Karen Vance Hammond. And we're talking about some really, I would say, kind of in-your-face paranormal activity that she experienced prior to and during, some of it, during the writing of her book, Shoe Marks. And I said, Karen, when we went away for break, that I've got a question or two based on the things that you've just told us. Now, you told us that your daughter was very young when some of these things were happening. Does she remember... and I know she's not a little child now. I saw her on Skype earlier when we were talking. But does she remember when she was a little girl any of these things that happened?
You know, she doesn't. Now, we have talked about it, and I did tell her what was happening. And she said, Mom, I just don't remember. Of course, she was so young. She was 2.5, 3 years old. And she does not remember that. And it's almost a blessing that she doesn't. because I don't, you know, nightmares and things like that. But no, to answer your question, she does not remember.
Now,
I remember.
Yeah, well, yeah. Yeah. During the period of time that you were living in this house where all this paranormal activity was happening up in North Texas, was there ever any paranormal activity that you felt was threatening?
You know, I didn't. And the reason why is that if I felt like that it was threatening and that it was going to harm my child, I would have been out of there immediately. I did not feel threatened. I felt more of, okay, you're here, let's deal with it. I'm in your territory, and we're just going to have to cohabitate. So, and I would just come straight out and just talk out loud sometimes when I would see something move or feel like I was being watched or felt a cold spot or a hot spot. I would say, it's okay. I won't be here long, and I'll shut the door. But, you know, after time, because we lived in that home for almost 5 years, it got to the point to where we were just so used to it that we were just oblivious to it after a while. I did have a friend of mine, and I do need to mention this. I do have a friend of mine that did come over to my home. I did not know that she was also into the paranormal and was a medium. I had no idea. And she came for dinner, her and her husband, and she kept looking very strange at me and past me and would look at the ceiling and then look behind me. And I finally said to her, Cynthia, what are you looking at? And she said, did you know that you have a ghost in your house? And I said, yes, I do. But I, you know, at that time, I wasn't going to make it public to anybody. But she said, I sense something very, very strong here. And it is female. I do want to let you know that. So, after we moved away from that home, I just, you know, took those memories with me. But like I said, no, I did not feel threatened. My husband did not feel threatened. And like I said, if I did feel like that it would hurt, or if it was some kind of menacing demon or, you know, something like that, then I definitely would have been out of that house quick.
Were you ever able to identify who this ghost is?
You know, I did not. And there is one thing that you do need to know is that when I was living in that home, I met a very dear friend, and she is the one that has introduced me to the home that is depicted in shoe marks, and her name is Jennifer. And she lived down the street from me, and she conveyed to me that she was having paranormal activity in her home. What we found out, we started doing some investigating, and I went down to the county courthouse, and I found out that the land that the homes were built on, these homes were built back in the early 80s, and was built by a stream, and that Indian arrowheads have been found. We also discovered, too, that that is one of the areas that the troops walked through going to battle. So that was very interesting as well. But I also started asking townspeople who lived in the town what this land was. Some of them said that it was a pig farm. Some said that it was at one time used as an Indian residential area. Early, way back. So I did get some facts, but no, I never got to pinpoint who was actually in my home.
I saw an article on the internet yesterday or today about the drought in Texas and how lakes that are normally very full of water are drying up. And
that is right.
Yeah, and one of those is Lake Buchanan.
Yes.
And this article showed a graveyard that is normally under 30 feet of water.
Yes.
The entire town that was there is normally under 30 feet of water.
Mm-hmm.
Would you suspect that with the water being receded as it is, the graveyard being exposed as it is, quite naturally people want to go look around, traipse around, see what's there because it's normally underwater. Mm-hmm. Would you suspect that would stir up some paranormal activity in the area?
I would think so. I'm not sure, but I am not one to investigate. I really try to steer away from investigating cemeteries, and the reason why is that that is a place of rest. And yes, there's, you know, I've seen the lake online. I have not been to the lake, but we have a lake here that's very close to Houston that is completely dry, and they are also finding graves and artifacts, and the police are now protecting it because they don't want anybody near that lake getting the artifacts because it is a burial place of rest. And so could there be paranormal activity? I would say there could. Haven't been there, so I don't know for sure. I know that my team has not gone out there and would not go out there because we really steer clear of graveyards, but I wouldn't be surprised.
All right, let's get to the story called Shoe Marks. I told you today I found it to be very, very interesting, well written.
Thank you.
And even though it is a novel, when you read this, folks, you don't get the feeling that you normally get when you read a novel. You get the feeling that this is real and it really happened. And, you know, the thing is, it's based on a real place and real haunting. Tell us a little bit about that. How did you come into contact with that information?
Okay, when I was living in Houston, I had, actually in Texas, I had made a very dear friend of mine whom I will call Jennifer. I cannot tell you her real name. I wish I could, but she has asked me not to. She and I were swapping ghost stories one day. We were at Starbucks and we were drinking coffee and swapping ghost stories, and I was telling her my experiences that I've heard over the years and vice versa. And she said, I grew up in a home that had horrific paranormal activity. And so she started telling me some things that she had experienced. And it just absolutely floored me. I mean, it blew me away. And I asked her, we were friends for about 4 months, and before I finally got the courage, I said, I really would like to go inside this home. This home her father purchased back in World War II. Unfortunately, he is now gone and not with us anymore. But he was wounded on D-Day and also Market Garden. And he retired because he was tired of getting shot up. And so he was, he got an honorable discharge and he got a new job teaching military history and regular history at one of the local universities. And they wanted, their family was growing, and so they wanted a home with charm and bedrooms. And so, the realtor took them to this home that was a Texas homestead. And so, when they purchased the home, they did learn that families had moved in and moved out as quick as they moved in, sometimes leaving everything behind. But according to, let me back up a little bit. I did ask if I could go inside of the home. Of course, her and her brothers and sisters still own the home to this day. And she said, sure. And so I got to spend 3 days inside of the home. The minute I walked in, I could tell there was paranormal activity. The hairs on my neck stood up. I felt sick to my stomach. I could not breathe. I felt like the oxygen was being drained from my body. I had to go outside several times and just get some air. But some of the things that she told me that happened, and I don't want to be too drawn out here, but I do need to tell the listeners the entire story so they will understand why I wrote this novel and why it was very important that I do share this story. When, like I said, her father had purchased the home, and when they moved in, that is when the paranormal activity started. Now, according to what Jennifer told me in doing investigations and her family doing investigations, they had started questioning the townspeople. People live in this this small town, this small Texas town, for generations, and they knew the actual people who homesteaded this house. Maggie Horton, of course, I'm sorry, but I've had to change the name. I know that you read that in the book when mm-hmm. you read it, but I do need to give her respect. Had a baby at the age of 16. Now, back then, women didn't have lives. I mean, they worked the farm, they had kids, and married very young. So she had a baby, and two or three days after she had her baby, she mysteriously died. And the husband, after the funeral, disappeared, never to be seen again. So what the townspeople believe is that she was actually murdered. There are two marks, and Jennifer calls them shoe marks, and of course I do too. That's the name of the novel. Jennifer told me that when paranormal activity would start, the temperature would drop to freezing to where they could see their breath. There were two marks that are by the banister. I did see them. I did get to put my finger in them. They would actually bleed. Now, you've heard of walls bleeding. Of course, you know, you've seen the movie Amityville Horror, and of course, you know, the haunted shows that's on the television where walls bleed. Well, the walls didn't bleed in this one. The floor bled.
All right, now, these marks, we have a break coming up. These marks, I want to talk about those. I want to examine those a little bit closer when we get back from this break. And I want to examine what you observed related to these marks, you know, and I got a specific question about that. All right, we'll step away, and we'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. And my guest this evening, Karen Vance Hammond. She is a published author. The name of the book is Shoe Marks, and we're talking about the story behind that story. Now, you spent 3 days, Karen, you spent 3 days in this house that is the core, the basis of your book. And in those 3 days, you saw these marks on the floor. I guess they're on the floor. What, on the stairs, on the steps?
They're actually on the floor by the banister. Oh. They're about 5 inches long and approximately about 1/2 inch deep. At first, I thought that it was furniture that had been moved and at least that's what Jennifer believes. Now, she was there when the shoe marks were discovered, and that is in the book. Actually, her brother, her little brother, is the one that saw the blood in the shoe marks and ran and got his father. He came down and stuck his finger in it and said, "This is human." Now, to make his wife, who was also pregnant with their third child at the time, he tried to blow it off so that she wouldn't get upset, saying, oh, it's just the oils and it's the stain in the floor and things like that. But it, like I said, it is by the banister. It is on the floor. So I did get to see it. It's about 5 inches long and about probably a fourth to half an inch deep.
Okay, now, when you say by the banister, are we talking about on the ground floor or up at the top of the stairs?
We are talking about the ground floor.
Okay. Now, you saw them. You put your fingers in them. Mm-hmm. When you were in the house, was there any paranormal activity that took place in those 3 days?
Yes, there was.
Okay, now, before you tell us that, let me ask you, when this paranormal activity started, did you see any blood in these marks?
You know, I really wanted to, and I was hoping that I would, but I didn't at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they were moist. The wood was moist, but I did not get to see the blood. I wanted to. I was hoping to, but no, I did not. Now, what I experienced in the home was cold mm-hmm. spots, hot spots, so cold that you felt freezing. I could see my breath.
And what time of year was this?
This was not too long ago.
Oh, yeah, okay, so what season?
I'm sorry. I get you. This was in summertime.
Summertime in Texas.
Yes.
In Texas. And you could see your breath.
Oh, yes. It was that cold in the house. Hot spots, cold spots. I felt like I was being watched. I heard a woman's voice. I didn't get to make it out. I didn't know what it was saying. At first I thought that it was singing, but then the more that I listened to it, it did sound like a woman was speaking. Basically, that is all that I experienced in the home. But of course, you know, writing shoe marks and talking to Jennifer and doing the intense investigation that I did on this house, there's just so much more to tell. But that is what I experienced. Like I said, the minute that I walked into this home, I could tell that something was there.
All right. Now, did you, other than you being in the home for 3 days and experiencing what was there, did you do any other type of investigation on this home?
You know, she asked me that 3 days was really enough. It has turned into a business, and so they really, you know, didn't want me hanging around too much to do investigations. So 3 days was enough, and they could get back to their business. But I tell you what, 3 days was enough for me. So, you know, but like I said, I did get to see the shoe marks, and I was thankful for that. That is where they believe that Maggie was murdered. If you read further on, probably about chapter 20 is when I really start getting into how they believe that she died and things of that nature. But and another thing, too, that Jennifer told me, and I know that you read it already, Kevin, is that they could never keep the clocks set. They could never keep their clock set. It did not matter if it was an electrical clock, if it was a battery operated, if it was a grandfather clock. It did not matter. The clocks would always spin out of control, stopping at 9 o'clock. And they started making jokes about it. What time is it? Oh, it's 9 o'clock. They never could keep. They never could keep their clock set. Her mother is the one that started to notice that the clocks were never on the right time. They were always at 9 o'clock.
Well, you know, you dealt with that in such a mysterious way in your book. I mean, when she's being murdered, when she's being killed, all of a sudden, a clock that did not work started to chime and chimes 9 o'clock.
That's right.
And that's, you know, I read that and I thought, now that's just such a cool, cool thing to have in the book. Is that to this day?
I'm sorry, I hate to interrupt you, but to this day, they cannot keep their clock set. It's always at 9 o'clock.
All right, now the clock chiming, that part of it is fictional. That's part of the story, or is that something that people told you happened?
Actually, you know, like I said before, when Jennifer and her family started doing investigations and started asking people, they believe that she was murdered. But there's one thing that you do need to understand is that Maggie's remains, and I don't know how far you read into the book. I know that you read just about all of it, but her remains were found on the property, and her remains were brought in to the morgue, and the coroner believes that she died from a skull fracture to the head. They believe that she was murdered. So, you know, was it a beating? It could have been. I would think so. The husband mysteriously disappears, never to be seen again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. Now, in the story, the little baby, her baby, born 3-4 days before she died, gets left with friends.
That's right.
Is that what actually happened to the child?
That is what actually happened to the child.
And
if you read at the end of the book, you will see who that person is. I don't want to reveal it because then, I don't want to give away too much. But, you know, we need to tickle the ears a little bit. But, yes, that is the actual child that was left behind.
And has anybody interviewed this person in real life and found out what he thinks about all of this?
Has he been interviewed? I don't want to give away too much, but yes, he has.
Okay.
Yes, he has been interviewed.
So then we're seeing a whole lot of fact in the fiction in the book there.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Schumacher is inspired by true events. Of course, you know, as an author, and all authors do this, unless if they're writing a biography, you know, you may want to spice it up here and there, but yes, it is, the gist of the story is real. It did happen, and that is why I felt like that this needed to be shared.
All right. We have to step away for a break. And, folks, I told you, didn't I? If you read it on Facebook, I told you you'd like this. All right, we'll be back right after this, so don't go away. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We are talking this evening with Karen Vance Hammons. She is the author of a fantastic book, folks. You got to get it. You got to read it. It's called Shoe Marks. And I didn't get all the way through because I'm still fighting some of the computer problems we had last week. When I say I'm fighting computer problems, the problems are solved. But what I'm having to do is, we use a lot of software, believe me. And I'm having to get it, on the server and configured to work on the server and so forth. And so in between that and audio editing and video editing, I was reading the book. I got about 80 to 85% through the book. I'll finish the rest of it tonight. But I gotta tell you, it's really, really compelling and you gotta get it. Those of you who are joining us just now in this second hour, welcome aboard. I am delighted that you are here. My sincere sympathy to you for whatever kept you from the first hour, and more specifically from that announcement I made right at the beginning of the show. If you missed that, well, you've missed something very, very important. But we're glad you're here now. And we continue our conversation with Karen Vance Hammons. Is it Hammond or Hammons?
Hammond, H-A-M-M-O-N-D.
Yeah.
Let me spell my full name for the listeners and those who are also viewing. I'm hearing some kind of scratching noise. Do you hear that?
No, you're doing fine. Go ahead.
Okay. All right. It's Karen as in K, A-R-E-N, V as in victory, V-A-N-C-E, Hammond, H-A-M-M-O-N-D. You can also find Shoemarks on my website. You can find it at my publisher, which I'm going to tell you about later on how I got published, which is very interesting. But that's also found at Synergy, SynergeBooks.com. That's also available in ebook and paperback. I've had several, quite a number of people contact me on Facebook wanting signed, autographed signed copies of Shoemarks. So if you would like that, all you have to do is look me up. It's Karen Vance Hammond on Facebook and just message me. But I also wanted to share with you, and I thank you so much, Kevin, for your wonderful comments about Shoemarks. But I want to share with the viewers and also the listeners the reviews and endorsements I have had. It is really amazing how people have come forward and say, let me give you a review. And we're not talking about just your average Joe Blow. We're talking about TAPS members associates, award-winning authors. Brad Dupletchian, founder of Louisiana Spirits, has given a review, and he says, tired of the same old paranormal read. Fortunately, Karen Vance Hammond brings us a fresh breath air with Shoemarks. Karen truly has a talent for enveloping her readers into the story, which surrounds Maggie Horton, a housewife who lived during the 1800s in Texas. The book reads like a modern-day fictional novel, only this story is based on true events. Coming from a paranormal investigator of over 6 years, let me be the first to tell you this is a must-read. I had other, now he is also a TAPS affiliate. I've also had reviews from award-winning authors. Peace River Ghost Trackers, which was also on the Sci-Fi Channel. They say that history spawns the paranormal in this story. Young teens to older adults will enjoy this. A real page-turner. I couldn't put it down. Also, I had Dana Davis, an award-winning author, give a review. Bob Kelly from Paranormal Network, and also Ian Hicken, who also happens to be a Fox News affiliate, has said, Karen Vance Hammond's novel, Shoemarks, floored me. I highly recommend it. Absolutely fantastic. I mean, people have just come from all over the United States wanting to give reviews, and I'm just so thankful for that. I never thought that this would ever happen, ever.
Well, having read most of the book, I have to concur with all of those remarks. What about movie rights? Have you talked with anyone about that? Are you going to be a movie?
Well, I don't know. I've had several people who have read the book have written into their reviews on Facebook. Facebook is really my main focus of communication because I am down here in Houston. I don't know if a movie people come to me and want to speak to me about Shoemarks, I am totally open to that. So many people have said this would make a fantastic movie, how chilling it is. And so I really don't know how I would go about if I send the book in or if I ask permission to tell them to tell the producers and I don't know who I would go to for that. So if there's anybody out there who knows how to go about it to get it into a movie and a feature film, I am highly open to that because, like I said before, I have had several people say, this would make an awesome, awesome movie.
Well, it would, and let me tell you this. Getting it into a movie, that's easy. Getting it into a movie where you don't get ripped off, that's hard. And although I am in the radio and TV business, I mean, that's the technical side of what I do. I do know there are some real sharks in this. So the very first thing you need to do is get you a lawyer. Get you a good lawyer that can handle that. And then refer all requests to the attorney. Let the attorney protect you, because there are people who really, they'll take your story, make a great movie, make millions of dollars off of it, and you'll get nothing. So be careful.
Wow. Well, thanks for the heads up on that.
I know people that has happened to. I know people personally that I've met, and some that I've interviewed on this show, and that has happened to them, so be sure you have a good lawyer.
Well, that is exactly what I'm going to do.
While you were in the house, did you try recording any EVPs?
I did not bring any type of devices in to the home. This was actually on a whim. We were visiting, and I asked if I could go to the house, and, of course, she drove me there. I wish that I had, you know, taken my EVP, my devices inside of the home, my EVP recorder and some other technical stuff that I have, my EMF recorder. No, I wish I had, but I didn't have it with me at the time.
Yeah.
That is one thing that I do regret, but at least I did get to stay inside of the home, and I am thankful for that.
All right. At this point, I'm going to invite our audience to participate in the conversation. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question or a comment for Karen Vance Hammond, then we invite you to give us a telephone call, all right? The telephone number is 623-444-5889, 623-444-5889. And if you call that number, we will be more than happy to put you on the line with Karen. You can ask your question. You can make your comment. Now, I won't be giving that number over and over and over during the show. So you need to write it down. It is 623-444-5889. Now, if you happen to be outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, we understand that international long distance can be very expensive. And so we invite you, if you want to call us, please feel free to. But if you're outside the USA, outside of Canada, you may send us a flash message. Now, you do that by going to my website. And scroll down, you'll see the picture about tonight's show, and right above that picture is where you'll see a link that says Flash Message. Karen, we do have a caller on the line, so let's go to the telephone. And caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, Karen, this is Steve from Georgia.
Hello, Steve.
The first thing I'd like to say, Karen, is congratulations on your self-discipline. You know, it takes a lot of it to sit down and engage in the lonely art of writing, especially writing a novel-length book, and to write it successfully is excellent. What I'm going to give you is a little advice. By all means, do what Kevin said. Get yourself an attorney. And if you want to see this book, which sounds like it would just be excellent, excellent movie material, there's a book out by a guy by the name of Syd Barrett, and his name is S-Y-D, first name S-Y-D, last name mm-hmm. Barrett, B-A-R-R-E-T-T. He writes extensively about how to write screenplays. He has taught mm-hmm. most of the successful screenwriters in Hollywood, And you can also get yourself some software that you can put on your computer that will format your screenplay. And if you would write your own screenplay, you know, read up on this, you will lower the overhead, for one thing. And if you can get an attorney to shop around a screenplay to different producers, this would enhance your capacity to get the thing flipped into a movie that sounds like it would be very successful.
Well, thank you very much. And I have written his name down. It's S-Y-D-B-A-R-R-E-T-T. Is that correct?
B-A-R-R-E-T-T. I'm
okay.
Pretty sure that's his name. I've taken some creative writing classes in college myself, and I want to say that was the name of the guy who wrote one of the textbooks that I had to use, was Sid Barrett.
Okay.
I appreciate the fact that this takes place in Texas. I spent a number of years living in Texas myself, and I'll echo Kevin when he says, boy, if you saw your breath in a house in Texas in the middle of summer, that's pretty incredible.
I know. Oh, yeah.
for people who've never lived there,
mm-hmm.
William Tecumseh Sherman, the Union general, when he entered Texas, he said, if I owned hell in Texas, I believe I'd live in hell and rent Texas.
Because
it's hot there.
Oh. Well,
and,
I tell you what, we... I'm sorry. We have one season in Texas. Hot, 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 and hot.
Right. It depends on what part of Texas, though. I tell you what, I got snowed in solid for 3 days in Amarillo one time while I was
mm-hmm.
in the Army, and I was moving from El Paso to Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
My wife and child and I were... We were locked in to Amarillo, Texas, in the middle of the winter. And if you live up in the Panhandle, it gets cold. But it would be this book and the movie that would be made from it. It would benefit from capturing the spirit of life and how hard life was in the 1800s in Texas. And,
yeah.
I just want to say good work. Good work on the book, and I haven't read it yet, but I plan to. And and congratulations on getting published, and I can't wait to look on Internet Movie Database and find a preview for the upcoming movie.
Well, thank you so much for calling in. You have been so kind.
All right. Thank you very much, Steve. I was just thinking while he was talking, you know, there was a movie that came out that was called The Last Picture Show.
Mm-hmm.
And this movie, it was Peter Bogdanovich was the director. And this movie was, the setting, I guess, was the 50s. And
mm-hmm.
maybe the early 60s. Nah, it was the 50s. It was the 50s. And, you know, it was just, it was black and white, and you could, you almost sit there and just sweat with these people because it was so, visually, it was hot and dusty and, you know, I could see what he was talking about, making it look like, show what life was like in the 1800s.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you something, even right now, you get out around Odessa and that area in the summertime, and it's hot, it's dusty, it's tough out there. If you don't have air conditioning, it's just miserable. And I used to tell people when I was in Phoenix, Arizona, that we lived in the northern suburbs of hell. And I think Texas must be the southern suburbs of hell.
Well, I tell you what, we are in Houston, and this past summer has been the hottest summer ever on record. And I could not stay out for more than 5 minutes. I would have to go back in. Everything basically around Houston, and I have dead trees in my yard. Mm-hmm. There is no grass. My front yard looks like a sandbox. It is horrible. I have never seen anything like this. In fact, I wrote something on Facebook today to a friend that the water, I don't know where our water is coming from. Mm-hmm. I guess they're recycling it. I have no idea. But it's brown. You have to boil it. At least I do. I mean, now there's no directions to boil yet, but I do. But even our bath water smells like mud and fish.
Mm-hmm.
So it is really, really horrific. So I don't know about everybody out there, but I tell you what, you please hit your knees before you go to bed, because we have got to have some rain. Now, I know that Dallas did get some rain today, and I was looking on the Weather Channel just screaming at it. Why don't you come down here and rain on us? I have not seen rain in months. Months. I have not seen rain.
Well, I've lived through summers. I've lived through summers in Texas similar to that, and lived through every summer in Phoenix like that. And until people do it, they don't know how hard it can be. It is really, really tough. Now, one of the guys that I served with overseas, a great friend of mine, he and his wife both are great friends of mine, live not too far from you. In fact, probably in the same subdivision, you know, but or at least very, very close. I know that the last time I was there was several years ago, but the last time I was there, it looked like paradise. Uh-huh. Everything was lush and green and so forth. All right, let's get back to ghosts. Let's get back to shoe marks. And let's talk about while you're in the house, you thought you heard a woman's voice, or you did hear what you thought uh-huh. was a woman's uh-huh. voice. How many times did that happen?
I heard it twice. It was in the same day that I had visited. Of course, I was there for three consecutive days. But on the last day that I was there, that is when I heard the woman's voice. It was very faint, but it was loud enough to where you could hear it. And like I said, I wish that I had had my recorder, because I think probably that I could have picked up something a little bit more that would be more audible to the ear. But, yes, it did sound like a woman's voice. It sounded like speaking to me, but it was long, drawn out like this. So, and it was a high voice. Of course, I have more of a deeper voice, but it was a high voice, and it sounded young.
Mm-hmm.
Like a young woman. So, anyway, but one thing that I do want to say is that the caller that just came in, and he was so kind, he said that that it's important to show and to depict how hard life was. I did that in the first chapter.
Mm-hmm.
Milking cows, churning butter, wearing the same gray dress for the last 3 days. Sweat, you know, so I tried to depict that as much as possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think he was referring to being sure that gets into the movie.
Yes, yes. Oh, absolutely.
All right. Now, when you heard her voice, did you try to talk to her? Did you say anything to her?
Basically, I froze.
Uh-huh.
I was just stunned. After feeling the cold spots and hot spots and seeing my breath and then hearing a voice, I was stunned.
Mm-hmm.
I was not scared. It did not feel threatening, but I was stunned. And I looked around the room, didn't see anything, but it felt so close to me, like it was right next to me.
Now, this house is one of the original Texas homesteads.
Yes.
Does it have any of the original furnishings in it?
Actually, it does. I'm not too sure on how much belonged to Maggie. It does have some of her furniture. If you would read probably in chapter Let's see, it's about 22 chapters long, so if you will look probably in about chapter 17, she does, there is still a rocking chair that is still in the home. And of course, other, you know, Jennifer's family, their furniture is also in the home from World War II era. There is a cast iron wood burning stove that is authentic to the home. That is still there. It is an absolute beautiful house. It is two story, black shutters, white with black shutters on a pretty good big piece of land. At that time when Texas was being homesteaded, many people got 300 to 600 acres, so they were fortunate to get as much as they did. But I also want to tell you something that you don't know, Kevin, is that while I was writing Shoe Marks, I experienced paranormal activity in the townhome that I was living.
Oh, now see,
I
didn't know about that.
Yes, I did. I was writing Shoe Marks, the first time. And probably I have a very dear friend of mine who may be listening. Her name is Zarita. She is also a published author. She was going to try to tune in tonight. She and I were on the telephone, and I was reading the script to Shoe Marks to her. At the same time, both of our computers started getting these strange blue, yellow, red, squiggly lines. And I told her, I said, Zarita, hang on, my computer's messing up. She said, well, mine is too. And I said, well, what is yours doing? And she described the exact same thing. Both of our computers crashed at the same time. We could not get our computers back on. If we did get them back on, they were knocked off immediately at the same time. A second time that I was down in my office in our townhome, I was actually touched on the back of the head. I felt the hand at the top of my head, and it went all the way down to my shoulders while I was writing Shoe Marks.
Do you think it was Maggie?
I do. And the reason why I say is this. When you go into a home, and only people that have understand the paranormal will agree with me. If you take something with you, whether it be a tie, my tie was Jennifer. That was my tie. And the Annabelle Horror, I believe that the family took something that belonged to the home, and it followed them. Do I believe that it's Maggie? Very, very good possibility, because I did spend 3 days inside of the home, and my tie was Jennifer. I actually got to touch the shoe marks.
Mm-hmm.
So I took away something with me, not something that was tangible, but I took something not material with me, but I did take something away with me.
All right, we have to step away for break, and we're going to pick up there when we come back. I got some questions, as you might imagine. We'll be back right after this.
United Kingdom, and you are listening to the fantastic Kevin Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're talking with paranormal investigator and author Karen Vance Hammond. Karen, a couple of questions based on what we were talking about before we went to break. First thing, you talked about how your computer went crazy while you were talking with your friend about this case and about this book while you were writing it. Your computer went crazy. Hers went crazy. Did the computers ever work again?
They did work again after a couple of days. I did have a very hard time staying on for a few days when I would start writing Shoe Marks. It would totally just crash on me. Other times I would get squiggly lines and I was able to stay on and refresh. But the funny thing is that when I would get on other websites and do other things, the computer was fine. I had no problem. So I do believe that it was connected with Maggie and, Shoemark's, so, you know, it was just a really very, very strange thing. Very strange thing.
Okay, now, you finished writing Shoemark's when?
Let's see, it is now 2011. I finished writing Shoemark's and put the last dot on the last page, 2009.
Have you had any other contact with Maggie since then?
No, I have not. I have not been inside of that house again.
Okay, but she, at one point, she's visiting you while you're writing the book. Has she visited you since?
If she has, I don't know about it. We moved away from that townhome and bought our home outside of Houston, on the outskirts of Houston. So if I brought anything with me to this home, I don't think so. At least I haven't seen any paranormal activity in this house, you know, that I can say. So, but do I believe that it is Maggie? Very, very strong possibility. I can't say for sure, but it is a very strong possibility. And it is the contact that I had being touched on the head, and the computer's going crazy, and then feeling a very, very warm sensation, almost hot sensation, on the left side of my arm. Do I think it's her? Very good possibility. Because, like I said, I did have that tie to Jennifer, and I did go inside of the house.
All right. Just roll with me on this. Let's see where this goes. Tonight, you're speaking to us via a telephone, but we're watching, those who are watching our TV channel are watching your video coming in via Skype.
Mm-hmm.
And so I mentioned at the beginning of the show that we were having to do that because we had some difficulties with the audio on Skype.
We sure did.
Yeah. Now, if I'm not mistaken, you're actually using your daughter's Skype account.
Yes, I am.
So she uses it all the time. Does she have any problems with it?
No, she does not. That is the very strange thing.
Well, let me tell you, I use Skype all the time, and I don't have any problems with it. I told you when we were trying to work through those problems that, a couple of weeks ago, interviewed a member of the royal family of Japan via Skype.
You told me that.
Absolute perfect transmission, no problems whatsoever. I use it all the time. But today, we couldn't get away from echoes when we were testing this. What do you think?
Is there a tie? There certainly could be.
Did you feel any other sensation that would tell you there was paranormal activity happening?
Today?
Uh-huh.
The only thing is that I just found strange that the Skype wouldn't work and that there was an echo.
Uh-huh.
I could not hear the echo, but you could.
Yeah, it was coming. The reason you couldn't hear it is because it was coming from you. If it had been coming from me, you would have heard it on your speakers.
Right, right. And also, right now, I'm hearing a squelching sound, so I don't know where that's coming from. But as long as the listeners can hear and those that are viewing on Skype can hear, you know, that doesn't bother me. But I do hear a squelching in my ear. It says someone's talking.
Oh, really?
Yes. I wish that you could hear it.
Well, let me say to Maggie, if she's present, Maggie, you know, we are talking about you, and we're talking about you because you are a very interesting person. And thank you for being willing for your story to be out there. But look, hey, you know, it's not like I haven't had weird things happen before. But usually it's when we're talking about government stuff.
And then we
get expected technological interruptions. But this is totally unexpected because we're not talking about the government. We're not talking about cover-ups. We're talking about paranormal stuff. And honestly, I have never had Skype do what it was doing when we tried to talk with you. And your daughter even tried to come in and fix this, and she works with it all the time.
Right, and she couldn't even do it.
Yeah. Yeah, so, and that's why we have your audio coming in via a telephone. And because if we had the audio coming in via Skype, we'd be getting a horrible, immense echo.
Right.
So, I don't know. All right, so with this story, you, I mean, did... Let's say that you had written this as nonfiction. If you wrote it as nonfiction, then you would have some point that you're trying to get across to people that you need to know about this and here's why. What about with the novel, because it's kind of wrapped up in fiction, is there a point or you just think it's a great story people would enjoy?
I felt, you know, that's a very interesting question, and some people have asked me this before. Even though it is inspired by true events, it's still a fiction novel, but it is inspired by true events. So I felt so strongly about it, Kevin, when I went inside of the home and spoke with Jennifer and her brothers and sisters, and learned of Maggie and how strong I felt about it. I felt like that the story needed to be shared. So am I trying to make a point here? Yes, I am. But if I had written it as a nonfiction novel, I would have to go through so much red tape to get names, correct names, locations, attorneys. I would have to go through so much. So what I did was that I took this incredible true story about the Horton House. Of course, that's not the name of the actual house because they've asked me to change that for personal reasons, and I wanted to honor that. But I took the story and I just wrapped it around. So... yes, I am trying to make a point here, and but like I said, to have it into a nonfiction, there would have to be so much red tape, so much to do.
I have a flash message from Harry in the UK, and he wants to know, it's kind of long, so I'll summarize this. You said at the beginning of the show about your religious background. And he wants to know, now that you've written this book, how have your religious friends responded to you?
You know, I have been very fortunate in the fact that I have not had very... I've had some people taunt me and tease me and say, how can you... grow up in church, have a father and a mother who were Sunday school teachers for over 40 years, have a father-in-law who was a minister. You know, that's contradicting. But then again, you can also, you know, being a believer in the paranormal and being a God-fearing person, I have had some people tease me. And some people say, how in the world can you write this book? I knew you as a kid. How can you do this? And my answer is, I just felt so strongly about it. Now, has it changed my religious belief? Harry, no, it hasn't.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, caller, just hang on. We'll get to you here in just a second. Let me just make one observation here, Karen. There was a time when if you had written that the world, that the earth is round, there would be people mm-hmm. saying, hey, you know, you were brought up as a Christian. How could you write something so heretical? Because it was the absolute teaching of the church that the earth was flat. Okay, caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Clay from Arkansas.
Hello, Clay.
How are you tonight?
Doing well. How are you, sir?
Doing great.
Okay, good to hear from both of you. My question has been asked on a previous show, and it was never really given an answer to. Do poltergeists get weaker or stronger during different times of season? And I'll take my answer offline.
Have a good night. Thank you.
Okay. For those of you who did not understand, do poltergeists get stronger or weaker in seasons? Is that what he's asking?
Yes.
I don't know if it has anything to do with the seasons. I know that some people may laugh me off the show, but more babies are born on full moons, more children act crazy. I've got one on full moons. More death happens on full moons. The gravitational pull, I believe, may have something to do with it. But there are poltergeists out there, and there are demons out there, and you have to be careful. Does it have anything to do with the seasons, the turning of the seasons, the winter solstice? I don't know. I really don't know how to answer that. I wanted to know if Harry has experienced poltergeist activity, and if he does, can he maybe start making a list when, or maybe mark down when the poltergeist activity happens, or if it happens closer to the full moon or the new moon?
Yeah, that was yeah. Clay. That was Clay in Arkansas that asked about the poltergeist.
Clay, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, Clay.
But now, Maggie would not be considered a poltergeist, right?
Oh, no, absolutely not. And the one of the thing is, and of course, you know, I don't want to give too much away, but they did have a paranormal investigation team come inside the home. I don't know how far you got in the book, but you did say that you got it at least 80% mm-hmm. read, so you probably read that.
All right, we'll hear about that on the other side of this break. We do have to step away. We'll be back, ladies and gentlemen, right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and my guest this evening, Karen Vance Hammond. Karen, we're on final approach. That means we just have a few minutes left. I do have a flash message from Australia that I want to get to. Mark from Australia wants to know, he says, have you ever had so close an encounter with other ghosts?
Oh, yes. Oh, absolutely.
But you wrote about this one. Why didn't you write about the others?
That's coming in the Crossroads Trilogy. It's also coming out in my own biography called Karen's Story. This is my first paranormal novel. There are other paranormal novels to follow. So, yes, I will definitely be writing about those as well.
And so future novels will also be based on real cases?
Some will. If you look at my website, and let me go ahead and give that to everyone, and like I said, I've given it before, and I'm going to speak it very slowly.
Okay.
It's www.Karen, K-A-R-E-N, Vance, V as in victory, V-A-N-C-E, Hammond, H-A-M-M-O-N-D. If you look at my website, in fact, I just had someone write in on Facebook, if I could please tell again where the books can be found. They can be found on my website. They can also be found at my publisher, which is Synergy. That's SYNERGEBOOKS.com. Also, Amazon, Nook, Barnes & Noble. You can also find it on Smashwords, Fiction-Wise, and Books on Board. So it's everywhere. And if you also just Google my name, Karen Vance Hammond, then it will definitely show up.
Okay. So you do have plans to write about some of these other close encounters with ghosts, right?
Yes, I do.
But we were about to hear the response to your question, when I said, but Maggie was not a poltergeist.
No, she was not. And the reason why is this, and like I said, I don't know how far you got in the book. You said that you got about 80% of it.
Mm-hmm.
They did bring in a paranormal investigation team. Now, back in the 1940s, I want you to understand, here in Texas is the Bible Belt, and of course, back in that time, if you even mentioned the word ghost or paranormal activity, they would take you in the white coats and put you away.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, you know, paranormal activity is more accepted and talked about. And
don't you find that kind of curious? Because, I mean, that being the Bible Belt, that whole resurrection thing is kind of paranormal, isn't it?
I'm sorry, say that again.
I said, that's kind of odd for that reaction to be there in the Bible Belt, although I know it was there. But it's kind of odd because that whole resurrection thing is kind of paranormal, isn't it?
You mean Jesus' resurrection?
I would say anybody's resurrection. That would be paranormal.
I would say that was, I mean, I'm not saying that Jesus... paranormal.
Okay, I will. I'll take the heat for that. Resurrection is paranormal. It's certainly not normal. We don't know of anybody else that did it.
If somebody came back from the dead, let's say Lazarus in the Bible, he came back from the dead, would that be paranormal? I would certainly say so.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. It's just kind of interesting. I'm not attacking, churches or Christians or, you know, I'm observing. I think it's just very weird, for the ones that think paranormal is something dark and evil. I think it's very weird for Christians to have that view because they're carrying around a book full of stories about paranormal things happening. I mean, you know, you're talking about a few loaves of bread and some fishes fed 5,000. That's kind of paranormal, you know.
How many times, and, you know, I'm very strong in my faith, and I want you to understand this, but how many times in the Bible do you read about somebody having visions or having strong dreams or messages sent to them?
Mm-hmm.
How many times is the word angel mentioned? So that is something to think about, and you are bringing up a very, very interesting point.
Well, and I will take the heat for it. You didn't say it. You didn't bring it up. So everybody that's all ticked off about it, just write to me, and, you know, I'm used to that. I've been told I'm Satan's spawn anyway, so that's okay. But here's the point. The point is, everything that people call supernatural, that's another word for paranormal. Super, above, natural. Para, outside of and alongside, normal. They pretty much equal the same thing. All right, so what's the next book?
Well, if those that can look on my website, my next book is coming out in 2012. It is called The Monastery Murders. It does have a splash of paranormal in it. You can read the short synopsis on that. Also, my next novel, which follows, is the sequel, and it's called Identity. And then I'm working on my fourth paranormal novel, and it's called The Crossroads Trilogy. And then I'm also going to be starting very soon. In fact, I've already started it, which is my own biography. And if those will go online and look at my website and read my bio, then you will understand why I'm writing my own biography and about writing and getting published and how I got published. And but I want people to understand, too, is that Schumacher is not, and I will repeat this, Schumacher is not a self-published novel. I am contracted through Synergy eBooks. They are a wonderful publisher. They've been very, very good to me. When I started my quest of becoming published, of course, you know, I had to, you know, write a query letter and send in the first three chapters in hopes of being accepted. And of course, you know, I went through the same rejection letters that Stephen King went through, and you know, being rejected. But I was just tenacious about it, and I just knew that the good Lord had a publisher at the right time.
Mm-hmm.
That would find favor in it. And so it's really important that those that are listening and viewing through Skype that go on my website and read my bio, and then you'll understand why writing is so important to me.
Yeah. Let me say, for those who are listening for the very first time, nobody's viewing through Skype except me. Everybody else that's viewing is on our TV channel. Okay. Because the reason I say I don't want people to be writing and wondering how can I watch it through Skype, you can't. We pick up Skype mm-hmm. and rebroadcast it. Okay.
Okay.
We're just about out of time. Karen, I want to thank you for being with us this evening. And I would like for you to stay on the line with me. And I want to chat with you for just a minute after we close the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. It's fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. And thank you for those who called, those who sent flash messages. We do appreciate it. Let me say again, for those of you who missed the beginning of the show, Command Sergeant Major James Norton has died. Now, he is the guy who told us that amazing account of a UFO battle with the U.S. Army. Some people thought it was nonsense. Some people thought it was real. But I'll tell you what, I did find a few who corroborated what he had to say. We'll talk more about that tomorrow night. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you want to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.